Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
My next guest has faced a litany of extreme ups and downs since she shot to fame as one part of the girl group Atomic Kitten. Yeah. Now, this woman has been a national treasure, then cancelled, then applauded for making a comeback, and then vilified. But she is absolutely having the last laugh now. Kerry Katona, you're very welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you, my lovely.
You're flat out. You released a best-selling autobiography in 2006. It was called Too Much Too Young. And then a follow-on in 2012 called Still Standing. Mm-hmm. But so much has happened since then that it was time for another one. It's crazy. Now, can we just go back? When Still Standing was released, how was your life going then in 2012?
It was okay. It wasn't the best. I was in bankruptcy when that book came out, I think. And I think it was literally on the tour from my last book when I met George. My husband to DJ, who I've known George since I was a kid, since I was 14. And it was so, but I thought I found my feet, you know, that, you know, I got rid of Mark, I got rid of the drugs, and, you know, I'd been on my own for a while. And I thought things was okay. It was actually all right. I was quite happy. I was floating on air, to be honest.
You've been through so much, even at that stage, but things definitely took a bit of a darker turn when George K came into your life. Can we talk about that for a second? Because I think it's important for people to hear.
Absolutely. The reason why I released the book in October is it's actually Domestic Abuse Awareness Month as well. So I've known George since I was 14. But we always bumped into each other over the years. And his nickname was Gorgeous George. He was dropped like gorgeous looking. And he asked me to marry you when I was 17. And I was like, oh, bugger off, you know, I'm not interested. And then we bumped into each other again. We were both single at the time. And you have to bear in mind, my blueprint on how men should be wasn't the best because of how I was brought up. And I said, I've not seen you in years, George. Where have you been? He's open on the holidays. I haven't been anywhere nice. Anyway, you meant prison. You meant you just got out of prison. And for me, that was a massive turn on, a big bad boy, you know, that was my blueprint. You know, it was almost like I was cutting my nose off to spite my face because that was my self-worth. I believe that's how I was supposed to be loved. George was very controlling, and like, if I got a good hiding off George, he'd say to me, it's because you triggered me, you know what buttons to press, and it's because I love you that much. So I thought, he loves me that much. He just gets so wound up, he doesn't know how to express it, and that's his way of telling me he loves me, so he must love me so much.
Sure.
So I got trapped in that kind of relationship, and it's really, really difficult, you know, to get out of it. And I was with George for 6 years. You know, it was really difficult because we was on and off all the time. The police was always being called. You know, we had a lot of mental health issues. And then there was that part of me where it was like, I wasn't with Molly and Lily's dad, I wasn't with Max and Heidi's dad, and I've got DJ, do I want to go through this again? You know, my dream was just to have a mum, a dad and kids and, you know, all grow old together. Then Brian left me, so I was like, oh my God, I need to get married again, oh my God, you know, and that all messed up. And I wasn't in a rush to get married with George, but he became so obsessive with me that I thought he really loves me because he's that obsessive with me. That's real love, that is. And it took me a long time. I've been with Ryan now nearly 5 years, and even now I start to get used to the way Ryan loves me, because it's normal that I'm allowed to go out and do my own thing, and he's not ringing me every 2 minutes. I'm like, why is he not ringing me? Why is he not telling me to go home? He mustn't love me. But that's normal, apparently. Yeah. That's what normal people do.
Apparently so. Yeah, absolutely. George sadly died himself of a drug overdose. That must have had a huge impact on you. You have a daughter together. You mentioned their DJ. What does she know?
Well, it was the hardest conversation I've ever had to have in my life with anybody. I got a phone call, and it was off George's. It was ringing up saying it was George's adoptive dad on Facebook ringing me. Now, I had a restraining order against George, so I hadn't seen George in a year. Now, the last time I saw George, he came to the house. I asked him for a divorce. He refused to divorce me, and he'd been playing with spirituality and black magic. And George wasn't meant for this earth. George was meant to give me DJ. That's, I truly believe that. He had one foot in this earth and one foot out. He had a lot of issues, psychosis, schizophrenia, mental health issues. He wasn't a well man. And his dad was ringing, and I went to Ryan, they're calling me to tell me George is dead. And I went, don't be stupid. It's probably George. I went, no, he's dead. I know he is. I just knew it. And it turned out that he was dead. And I went home. I got Ryan to take DJ to the shops. She was only five, why I told the older four that was their dad. Because bear in mind, George brought them all up. Max was only four when he came into his life. You know, they, even Molly Lily called George dad. Even in front of Brian, they called him dad. And Brian was okay with that, because he knew that George did the parents' evening, the school run, said he could be great. He could be so amazing when he wanted to be. Like, he did the cooking, the cleaning, the school run, but that was him taking my power away. So I lost all my independence. I didn't know what to do. I was so reliant on him that when we used to split up, I used to have panic attacks thinking, how do I do the school run? Because he really got into your head that I had to really rely on him. But anyway, Ryan took DJ to Morrison's. They are other supermarkets available, by the way. took DJ to the shops because I didn't want, DJ was only five, just turned, and I didn't want DJ to react the same way as the older children, because she was at that age where she was mimicking the others' reactions, so to speak. So I thought it was important to tell DJ by herself. So I told the older four children. They threw themselves on the floor, absolutely devastated. I took DJ upstairs and I told her that Daddy has gone to heaven. He's passed away. He was poorly and he wasn't well, but he loved you very much. And I've made it really, really clear to DJ that I was the one that stopped her from seeing her dad. That was my decision, not a daddy's. That was my decision. And I know I did the right thing. But that's something that's always played on my mind, but I know I did the right thing because I truly believe that we won't be here today if that was the case.
How's she doing now? She's eight.
She's amazing.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, she's like a cow bag.
Oh, listen, I have an 8-year-old as well. It's a nightmare.
Oh, the attitude.
Oh,
the
stop.
Because she's my youngest, Gem, right? She's my youngest, right? And I've model coddled her as well.
Yeah.
Especially with her dad not being here. And, you know, she's only ever known Ryan to be in her life. She's never known life before Ryan, which is amazing. But I have model coddled because she's my baby. She's the youngest one. And my God, have I made her off my back doing that. I've got the eye, and about that age now, it's the eye rolling, the attitude, the head shaking, the finger clicking. She was just watching, we were just watching telly a minute ago. Was getting in the mood for Halloween. And she just said, honey, I'd run to Mexico if I was you. Oh my God. And I said, did you just say honey? You know, she's getting that attitude from watching TikTok and YouTube. And yeah, but
this
I've got four
start.
Girls.
You so, do, you
yeah.
do.
Listen, four girls and one boy.
I read that you may go for baby number six with Ryan. Is that true?
Yeah, it is true. I mean, me and Ryan haven't got any biological children together. Ryan hasn't any children of his own. I'm a lot older than Ryan. I'm 42 now. So all I'm doing is getting my eggs frozen. We're just having an embryo freeze. That's the only stage we're at. We're just making sure I've got eggs, which I do. Ryan's just done his test. We're waiting for the results to go back, and then we'll go to the next stage. I will not be carrying a child. I nearly died with DJ, and DJ did die. In fact, she was on life support, and I will not put my kids through that at all. I won't put that through at all because I'd be too scared if something was to happen to me and I was to leave my kids behind. So it's not a risk I'm willing to take. So if we do go to that step, it'll be surrogacy.
Surrogacy, yeah, okay. So Molly is studying in Ireland. I have to ask you about Brian McFadden with the Irish connection and all of that. And obviously we know
they
used to be in Westlife. Yeah.
Well,
you look like you're getting on so well. There was a video recently.
No, I'm joking. I don't know, Brian. It's so funny because you got to bear in mind that, no one asks about Mark Croft. It is mainly always about Brian because he's the once in a limelight. But I don't really have a relationship with Brian. It was Molly's 21st and, you know, we was there for Molly. It was Molly's first time having both me and Brian in the room. You know, I've not known Brian. God, I can't keep up. Who are we talking about? I've got that many husbands. I can't keep up. Yeah. So, I wish Brian all the best of luck. We
Good
get on as and when we do. But it's my girls are older now. You know, they're 19 and 21. So there's not really much to be in contact with. And we never really were that much in contact anyway. But he's their dad. They love him. He loves them. And I wish him a lifetime of happiness. I really do. He's got a lovely partner, Danielle. I absolutely adore her. They've got a beautiful little baby. But yeah, it's he always gets mentioned. I don't know why.
But that's kind of, you know,
teasing.
Why? You
I'm
know
teasing.
Why?
Come I'm here. Only joking.
How is Molly getting on in Ireland? She's studying here. How is she? How is she finding it? Is she enjoying
Molly's
it?
Molly's at the Lee. She's doing a degree in acting.
Wow.
Molly moved over there when she was 16. She did her GCSEs here in England. She didn't get what she wanted, and so I spoke to her nan because, like, Brian doesn't live in Ireland, so. People think that Molly lives with Brian. She lives with her nan and granddad, who absolutely adore her and have worked wonders for her. So she moved over there. She did an extra 3 years of her education. Then she moved to London, which she absolutely hated. Then she moved back home. And then I was like, why don't you go back to Ireland? You're flourishing over there. And she was desperate to get in the Lair. And she finally got in the Lair as well. So it's all worked out well. So she's home for Christmas, which can't wait. So I haven't seen her since her birthday, but we talk all the time on FaceTime. But yeah, she's 21 now. Can you believe it?
No, I can't believe it.
I know, I feel so old.
Yeah, you have a 21-year-old. Crazy.
I rang her up when she was 20 saying, oh, you, come on, pop a kid out. I was 20 when I had you.
No, you're not ready to be gran. You're not ready to
You know what? I think I prefer to be grandma than I would to be mum again.
Yeah, maybe. Less work. You're dead right. I just want to go back to that interview because it's very significant of a time in your life and it came out that you're bipolar and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Because
interview?
Well, remember the one you did with Philip and Fern and they
You've not got a clue what you're talking about.
They seemed really concerned. They seemed concerned that you're addicted to alcohol and the News of the World had this video of you doing drugs and all that. What was going on around that time?
You know what? I've shoved enough crap up my nose. I've done loads of coke. I've drank till cows come home. I've got no reason to lie. That was pure bipolar medication. And the way I was criticised for a medication that a doctor gave me, a side effect, which make my speech slur. I mean, I talk fast anyway, and I roll over my words. But my medication used to slow my speech down. It's a side effect. You know, I remember going in the Priory because it was trial and error. And every time I was in the Priory, everyone thought it was because of drugs. It wasn't. It was trial and error on the right medication. I was pregnant at the time with my son, Max. So they tried to find me the right medication. And I remember Mark coming in the room. I was actually dribbling from my mouth because the dosage was that high. Anyway, I never stopped taking that medication when Max was born. I continued on that meds. It was clopromazine, it was called. Google it. It's a really, really high psychotic drug. And I was on valmethexine and zopicone. I took my medication really late at night. And I feel like if I had a sat on this morning, slurring my words, Gem, in a wheelchair with 3-degree burns all over my face and a limb missing, we would not be having this conversation now. Because people can see there's something physically wrong with me. So they'd be like, oh, God love her. Oh, lads, look. Oh, what a shame. But because of the side effects of the medication that's affecting my mental illness that's in my brain that nobody can see, oh, she's drunk. Oh, she's on coke. Oh, she's this. Oh, she's that. After that show, I did an alcoholic test. I did drugs. I've got no reason to lie. Mm. We all know I've done drugs.
You're very honest.
I've got no reason to lie whatsoever. Do you know what I mean? I've done it all. But that was bipolar medication. And what annoys me when I look back on that, I remember Fern was sat there with OK Magazine. And I fell out with Max Clifford at the time. And so I had him against me anyway. Mm-hmm. And Fern sat there with this magazine shoot that I've just done. I was 28 years of age, just on this photo shoot in Marbella. And in the article, she goes, and it's your words here, Kerry, you saying you're necking these shots back round the pool before you did a photo shoot. I was like, yes, I had loads of shots. You know, what do you think, you're an alcoholic? I'm 28 years of age. I'm in Marbella without my children on a working holiday. Of course I'm going to be drinking shots. But your speech is slurred. I was like, that's because I took medication late last night. I have an illness called bipolar and it's a side effect. Not once did any of them say to me, oh, bipolar. What's that, Kerry? Mm. Explain what bipolar is to us and the viewers. And what's the medication that you've been taking? No, wasn't nothing like that. Nothing. I said it just got completely took out of control. And I like to think that I've been a beacon for a lot of people with mental health illnesses for people to actually understand, because I got battered. I got crucified for that. I was suicidal after that interview.
Do you resent Fern for that? Do you resent Fern?
No, not at all. Don't resent anybody. No, don't resent anybody. You can't live with regret.
Kerry, you don't sound like you do. You sound like one of those people. I mean, you've been through so much. Your life, that's why, you know, you're only 42 and you already have 3 books. Your life has been crazy, but you're a survivor and you sound like a type of person who really doesn't hold grudges. I mean,
what's the point? I think holding a grudge is like being in a rocking chair, going back and forth, back and forth. You're going nowhere with it. There was a time in my life around about the age of 28 when, you know, I went into bankruptcy. I lost everything. It was my mum's fault for my childhood. It was Brian's fault for leaving me. It was Mark's fault for my accountants. You know, it was Philip and Fern's fault. It was everybody else's fault but my own. I've got to take responsibility. No one forced me to do anything. Bear in mind, though, my upbringing, my blueprint wasn't like everybody else. I only did what I was thought that was normal. I was doing drugs with my mum from the age of 14. So I thought that was normal. You know, my so-called career in drugs started well before I was famous. I was 14. My mum gave me this drug. It was she told me it was sherbet and it was speed. I didn't know any different. So I'd save my pocket money up off my foster parents and buy a wrap of Whiz and go out for the weekend with my mum. That's what I thought was normal, you know. So, but as I got older, I knew what was right and wrong. And, you know, we all have a choice. And I made a lot of wrong choices. And I've got to hold my hands up. And I've got to take responsibility for that. And all I can do is send out love and happiness to all those that I feel have done me wrong or who I've done wrong and, you know, live my best life. I can't do anything about yesterday.
How's your relationship with your mother now?
Yeah, my mum's great. She's my mum drinks. My mum's alcoholic. You know, she's never going to change. We're not as close as what we used to be. She's my mum and I love her. And I've only got one mum and that's it. All I know is I'm grateful to my mum for my childhood as bad as it was, because I think without my childhood, I probably wouldn't be as resilient as what I am now. And I've been able to get through the stuff that I got through as an adult, if that makes sense. Because I've never known any different. My first memory is watching my mum slit her wrist when I was three. So I don't know any different, you know, 4 sets of foster parents, 8 different schools, but I've got no regrets. I don't want sympathy. You know, I had some great times in refuges with my mum, you know, and when we were skin and, you know, going in the pubs and stuff. But that's made me who I am. And it's made me know how not to be a mother and how to be a mother. Sure. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, my kids are private educated. They're very well spoken. You know, they've never witnessed anything. I'm very open and honest with my kids. You know, they walk around the house now. They know about the drugs, you know, about everything, because I've got, you know, this is the real world we're talking about. It's not all rainbows and unicorns, unfortunately, but life can be as good as you make it. It's only down to you. I can't sit here, you know, wallowing in self-pity, because where's that going to get me? What's that going to teach my kids? Things happen. I've got to deal with it.
And do you think being honest with your kids is the way to deal with that kind of stuff? Just laying it all out on the table. Yeah.
Why lie? Why lie to them? Because if they're going to hear it from somebody else, I'm all over the internet. You know, the internet's there forever. The only thing I can tell my children is, you know, there's no mistakes, only lessons. You keep doing the same thing, you're going to keep getting the same results. So you've got to change at some point. I think my changing came when I finally left George. I think it was Molly. Molly gave me this look of pure weakness. And I thought, I'm doing exactly what my mum did to me. Exactly what I did to, you know. And I remember sitting Molly and Lily down in the living room and profusely apologising, saying, I'm so sorry, you know, because he used to come home from school and he's all right, go upstairs to the bedroom, don't speak. You know, I was doing exactly what my mum did. So, I mean, I can't do anything about that now. I can't change it.
Well, you found the strength to leave eventually.
It's not that easy. It really isn't that easy.
If anybody's listening who's in that situation, there are organisations to help. And sometimes it's just picking up the phone, speaking to someone, and it's just making that little baby step. You were fortunate you had your daughters and they inspired you and gave you the strength to do it. Mm-hmm. And thank God they did. And fair play to you, because that is a really difficult thing to do. Speaking about the internet, your OnlyFans, I have to talk to you about that. Fair fucking play to you.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that. Fair play to
you. Let's get you a few more subscribers in this conversation.
But absolutely. Get on there, lads and girls. I don't mind.
But I love that you said you're making money while you sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I started out as a page three model, a glamour model. You know, I wasn't going to be a rocket scientist, but I had a great set of boobs on me. Do you know what I mean? That was my get out. I was a good looking girl. I'm not going to kid anybody. I've always been a tomboy and down to earth. I've never been one of these girly girls who's like, ooh, look at me, you know, pouting my lips. But I can turn it on for a camera. And I love getting my boobs out. They're great boobs.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They look fake and implants. And that was my get out. And I know full well I got an Atomic Kitten. Because of my personality, because of my humour, and because of the way I looked. Do you know what I mean? And, yeah. And that was my get out. And I'll go on holiday every year. I'll go on holiday every year with my kids. I'll go topless. I'll have my picture taken. And they'll be pop there taking pictures. And they get all the money. So why should I not do it?
Yeah.
You go to the cinema every year. Every year we watch Love Actually, don't we? And there's a scene in Love Actually with Martin Freeman and the girl from Gavin and Stacey. Do you know what scene I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The standing dribbles as actors naked.
Oh, yeah.
Why does she not get all the crap like I get? Why does Natalie Kidman not get crap like I get? Go, oh, you're poor kids. That scene where you're gyrating and faking sex in that film, or Natalie Portman in Black Swan where she's masturbating. I don't do that. I show a bit of nipple. Do you know what I mean? But because I'm from a working class background, because I'm not theatrical or a thespian, I didn't go to, you know, Sylvia Young or anything like that. It, you get treated differently because of your background, because of how you come across and what class you're in. I'm doing nothing different that Angelina Jolie, Jennifer Aniston's done. I'm a D-lister. These are A-listers, but I'm doing nothing different than what they're doing. They do movies, you know. Simulating sex.
Are you saying OnlyFans is art?
I wouldn't say it's art, but I wouldn't even say that was art. Some stuff is just pure porn.
Yeah.
And I do soft porn, but what's the difference? Why is that art? I mean, I think it's really artistic that I do. I think my pictures I do are beautiful, really nice. Back in the day, we used to have Zoo Magazine, FHM, mm-hmm. and Nuts. We have none of them anymore. So that's what OnlyFans is for me. And I've done all of those magazines. I've done page three. So until I'm tripping over my nipples, I will continue getting these bad boys out and
get
making a lot of money.
Putting
my kids in private education.
And you know what? And it's a lot safer. Let's be honest, because you're in total control. Taking
Absolutely,
these pictures.
But,
you do it where yeah. you like it, when you like it. You have your own
Absolutely.
Time. You do it on your
but
time
it's not
scale.
Just that. I will build a sandcastle on holiday with our DJ topless and a pap will get a picture. Right? And they make all the money from that picture and it'll end up in the newspaper. No one says anything about that, but because I've taken control and I'm taking the pictures myself, it's frowned upon. Why? Because it's not a man taking a picture and it's me, a woman who owns my own body. I've become a millionaire because of it. I've always got 2 Lamborghinis in my drive. Say all you want, but I'm living my best life. And because that money I've made from OnlyFans, I've been able to invest in me. Which I've been able to start my online boutique. I've got Marnie, my dating app. I've got my fitness app, MFit. You know, it's been absolutely amazing for me. And I've got no regrets. I've got my kids in private education. We live in a nice house. We're all healthy. And I'm making the money. I'm in control of it. And I say, anybody wants to get on there, go and do it. And if you want to subscribe, get on there now.
Get on there now. I have lovely feet. I'm thinking about doing it. I think
I do feet, Pete. Absolutely.
Do your feet, is the feet popular? The feet pictures?
The feet pictures are well popular. I'm only a size 3, me. So I love it, but I think, why not? You know, someone's going to pay me a ridiculous amount of money for me to take a picture of my foot.
Do it.
Would I be stupid to say no? Yeah,
you would. Yeah, yeah. No, you're dead right.
I'll tell you what. If someone came up to you, Jen, on the sign went, yeah, love, here's £5,000, cash in hand. Just take one picture of your foot in toilet for me. We take
yeah.
you off.
Oh, yeah.
You weren't going to say no to that.
I give him 2 feet. I would.
Yeah.
I would.
Oh, no. You've got to charge your mic, Jen. Five grand per foot.
Kerry, listen.
£1,000 a toe.
It's been a pleasure chatting to you. It's great to hear you have a new book. It's Whole Again by Kerry Katone. It is actually out now. Thanks for chatting to us. Best of luck to you and all your kids. And Ryan, it sounds like you're in a really, really good place and it's lovely to hear.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming on the show, Kerry. And I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you for having me, my darling. All the best.
Anytime. Bye, love. There we go. That is Kerry Katona. What a survivor. What a woman. We'll be back right after this.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.